MyMac Podcast number 129, sponsored by Audible.com and MyMac.com.
We've got the Spec Products see-through case winners.
And those are going to be live phone calls, so let's find out who wins.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com Podcast.
So we're recording the show in reverse order. This is the beginning of the show, but this is actually the last thing we're recording.
Yeah, well, that's how it works out.
Yeah, sometimes it's just kind of weird that way.
Yeah, well, one of our winners was actually from the UK, and we wanted to try to get that call in as early as we could, knowing if he was staying up late, we didn't want him to stay up too late.
Yep, and the other one is in Lakeland, Florida, and we're giving away, I know last week I said we're giving away a case, but we're actually giving away two cases.
Yep.
We try to give away three.
Mm-hmm.
One of our winners wasn't home, so we had to move on.
That's true.
And so we want to thank Spec Products. The see-through MacBook and MacBook Pro cases are awesome. They come in a variety of flavors and colors. Well, mm-hmm. I don't know about flavors. Mine, when I've looked at it, tasted pretty good, but that was right after I spilled some sugar on it, so it might have been the sugar.
That could be.
Not a lot of Mac news going on. Not a lot of iPod news.
No, but you know, I wanted to bring up one thing just because I found the little factoid.
Oh.
This is from an interview with Ed Zander, and this is from, where am I at?
Uh-oh.
Oh, Mac Observer.
Mac Observer?
Yeah, and we actually talked about how many cell phones are out there in the market.
Right.
And here's the quote they had. 4 people are born every second, and in the same amount of time, 32 mobile phones are sold.
Wow.
There are 2.7 billion mobile devices in the market.
Mm-hmm.
3 times as many as there are cars and PCs.
Wow, so, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
So the mobile phones are taking over. And if you can get 2 or 3, at least 2% is Apple.
Ugh. They're going to rule. Yeah. Right now, it's probably Motorola owns that market, I would say.
And, yeah.
LG. I know they're big in the cell phone markets, but... We really don't know what's going on in, like, Korea. It's the cell phones are huge. Personal gadgets in Korea are huge.
Yeah.
So we'll see if Apple can break into that market as well. But, you know, enough of the iPhone. It's not out yet.
It's probably
got another month to go. I'm getting tired of hearing about it. I just want them to be released and see how they do.
And get onto something new.
We're about a month away, less than a month away now, from WWDC.
Yep.
Everybody, including myself, is looking forward to it. Apple has sent out... notifications to a lot of people. I've got one, and it basically says come to WWDC and get your feature complete beta copy of 10.5. So
nice.
Feature complete, I think, is the key there. Feature complete. You now remember the last time.
What the heck does that mean?
Well, the last time he showed it, the last WWDC, he said we're not showing all the features right now.
Right.
We don't want freaking Microsoft to copy everything we're doing. So
let them get their Vista out the door.
Yeah, and then we'll show you what we've got coming. So I think that's what this is. I think we're going to finally see whatever these other features are. It better be a knockout punch is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
As cool as the features already shown, these hidden features, these secret things that Steve Jobs alluded to in the last keynote, better be of sufficient quality to knock my socks off. Or I think it's going to be somewhat of a letdown and a disappointment.
Right.
Especially when you consider the fact that they're 6 months behind in shipping it than originally they were, because supposedly they had to take off engineers from the OS X and put them on the iPhone to get that out the door.
Right.
Could they, I don't know, maybe you've hired some more people? Do they really need... to me, that seems more and more suspect the more I think about it. That they had to take Mac programmers... OS X programmers and put them on the iPhone to get it out the door.
Yeah, but you got to remember that the iPhone does run a light version of OS X. So.
Yeah, but I don't know. It seems a little fishy to me.
Yeah, but you know, those may be services that Apple does not contract out. So it may be services you don't want to have hired out even temporarily.
Yeah, I would say that you don't want your core assets to be handled by the manpower guy.
Yeah.
What do we got going on this last week? Chad and I had quite an adventure. We went and saw Spider-Man 3 on Sunday, and we actually recorded a Dung Bowlers in response to watching the movie. So
yeah, so you'll have to listen to that to get our opinions on that movie.
Yeah, check out dungbowlers.com. You'll find the links to it.
Yep.
Saturday
night.
Yeah. What happened was, it's a little bit of a story, and it's not Mac-related, but it's important enough, I think, to go over a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night, I get home. a little bit before my wife, I had done the grocery shopping, and she had gone just plain shopping. And I had one of the kids with me, and she had one of the kids with her. Actually, I had two of the kids with me. She had one with her. And when she got home, she had an extra kid, which was kind of strange. Our niece, Courtney. And before I can even ask why Courtney was there, my wife told me that her sister had called her to inform her that their son, CJ, who's 12 years old, and at Boy Scout camp, was missing. And had been missing at this point for, what, 6 hours or so?
Yeah, I think 5 or 6 hours. Yeah.
And, of course, that's any parent's worst nightmare, that your child comes up missing. And where he was located was about an hour, a little over an hour from where Chad and I, our city. And I immediately called CJ's dad, Tom, and told him I was coming up. And then I called Chad and asked if he was busy, and he wasn't. And I asked if he'd come up there with me. And I told him why, you know, there's a missing child. And graciously, Chad agreed, and he came up too. And it was quite scary. It really was. Fortunately, it had a good ending. Within 15 minutes of getting there, he was found. So basically, Chad and I showed up and they found him.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was, you know, we brought good luck. But it was a very strange drive up there for me. We've never been to this place. It was what, Waterloo?
Waterloo State Park, which, or State Recreational Area, which is the largest state park in northern Michigan, or in
lower
Michigan, about 20,000 square acres.
It's so this place is huge. We used a GPS to get us there. I've got a Garmin 340i or something like that. And this was really the first time I've had the chance to use it to get somewhere where I've never been. And I'm impressed. It got us right there.
Yes.
Where we went, however, wasn't where they were camping. And this place was really big.
So we stopped at the main
office.
The main office at the park, and had to get maps. And then from there, I navigate the old-fashioned way to get us there.
Take a left, take a right, take a left.
And that was still a 15-minute drive just
absolutely.
To get there.
Yeah, and it's not like I was going 10 miles an hour either. I was moving pretty good on those dirt roads. Basically, what happened was CJ was on a bike ride with his riding buddy. Because when you're in camp like that, you never go anywhere by yourself. So he was with a friend, and they were bike riding the trails. His friend decided he wanted to go back to the camp. Two bad things happened right then. Number one, CJ's friend left him. And number two, CJ kept going.
Yep.
If either one of them would have made a better decision, you don't leave your buddy, and you don't continue to go when your buddy wants to leave. And CJ basically got lost, and he stayed on the trails rather than staying on the roads that he kept coming across, which that compounded the problem that he's literally in the woods rather than following the roads. He got hungry. It was getting dark. It wasn't getting really cold yet, but it was getting a little nippy, especially if you're in shorts riding on a bicycle. And he eventually flagged down a car, and that person had a cell phone, and they called
called his dad.
Yeah. So it was a happy ending, and I was...
And I think when they said that when they had found him, he was about 15 miles from where...
From where he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many kilometers that is, so people in Europe are like, well, how many miles is in a kilometer or vice versa? I don't know.
Yeah, it's about 23 kilometers.
Yeah. So for those in the... European colonies. Yeah,
anybody who's not in the English standard system, which is the United States.
Canada uses it. England does. Europe does. We're the only ones that use the,
the English standard.
Pounds and miles and, England doesn't even use them anymore, do they?
No.
We're the only ignorant country still using it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Ugh, I tell you, America. Anyways, I live in my country. It had a good ending,
It was the best outcome for us, because I think we both said the best thing that can happen is we show up there and he's already found.
He was found.
Yeah.
I was amazed at how many fire trucks and ambulances that were there when we got there. So it was a large rescue.
Yeah, that was Waterloo Township, and I think they had Chelsea Township. Yeah,
and they also had an ambulance come from Albion.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, a half hour away.
Yeah.
So, you know, when a kid's missing out in the woods, boy, people show up.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a good ending. So Chad and I were both very pleased about that.
Yeah.
So what else is going on? What do we need to talk about? Probably what's going on up at MyMac.com. We do want to thank Spec Products for supplying the prize for this week's contest, and we'll get to the contest here in just a second.
And, of course, we want to thank our sponsor, Audible.com.
Audible.com. If it's audio, it's audible. I just made that up. See what
No,
I
you
there?
Said if you can hear it, it's audible.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said, wasn't it? Yeah.
If you can hear it, it's audible.
It's audible. I wonder if they've ever thought of that. I should send their marketing guy who bought the ad space at MyMac.com. Say, dude, here is
now,
your
he's
next.
Probably listening to this right now in his queue going, ha, 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 idiot, we knew that already.
Yeah, we thought about that and rejected it like 4 years ago. You art-hards. if it's audible. Or no.
If you can hear it.
It's audible. I like that. That's pretty cool.
Not bad.
We are hoping that anybody listening to this will go up to audible.com, check it out. You can get a free audiobook. Try it for 2 weeks. Not going to cost you anything. You don't like it after 2 weeks, cancel it.
Mm-hmm.
Keep the audiobook that you get. All we ask is go up to mymac.com and click the Audible link at the very top of the page.
And what the heck? You already subscribed to podcasts, so you know you'll use it.
Yeah, you'll definitely use it, and you probably have an iPod, and it works seamlessly with it. So, up on the mymac.com website, Larry Grinnell has a Fun with Black MacBook Redux. He talks about his MacBook that he has. He's really happy with it, it seems. I have... did you look at my blog post?
Oh, the... So is it cleanly explicit?
Or explicitly clean. Yeah. It has a listing in the iTunes Music Store for a Green Day song. It's a remake of a John Lennon song. And there's a clean version and a, I don't know, an explicit one. But they have the explicit tag on both.
Yeah.
That's very weird.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because Apple marks the album as explicit. Thus, every track on that album is also listed as explicit.
Yeah.
And so that's why they probably put the clean version in parentheses in the listing.
Yep. And we've got a post by Bakari, which is IDVD slideshow tip, which is actually a neat tip.
And I haven't even read it yet.
Yeah.
It was posted about the same time that I was preparing for the show.
Basically, it's about getting a particular slide to display for a longer period using IDVD.
My problem with IDVD is that it only lets you put in 99... slides per slideshow.
Yeah.
And I wanted to do a lot more than that. But so I've never really explored its full potential as I should. I've gone pretty far in it, but I need to. It's one of those applications that I just want to play with a lot more than I'm able to.
Right.
I just don't have enough hours in the day. And now that Adobe CS3 is out,
you have even less.
So. Yeah, I have even less.
And we've got on the features side a review of Quick Snap by Donnie Angelo.
I will say that we have more content, and the reason it's not up on the feature side right now is because I am having a medical problem with my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
I can see fine. They are a little stingy, and it actually bothers me to look at a computer screen for any length of time, I think, because you really have to concentrate.
Yeah.
It turns out I have a infection.
A bacterial
infection in my right eye, which is also affecting my left. It basically looks like I haven't slept in a while.
Yeah.
Everybody says, "Oh, is that pink eye?"
No.
No, it's not pink eye. It's not infectious, what I have. But it's just a pain in the butt. It really is. And what really kills me more is that's what I have this week. And when I wake up in the morning, my eyes are literally glued shut. It's really bothering me. And I'm sleeping longer than I should in the morning, probably because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, I wasn't feeling good. I was all completely congested. I had a sinus infection. And the week before that, I'd actually hurt my knee. I twisted my knee up pretty good, and I was limping. And the week before that is when I started running.
Yeah.
So I haven't got back to running yet. And I finally, I go out and buy running shoes. I got the stupid pants that make me sweat even more. And I'm getting up at 5 a.m. to go out and run. And every week since I started running, I did a solid week of running, and then my body like falls apart on me for 3 weeks in a row, and I can't get back out there and run. Now, the eyes really doesn't affect me going out and run, but My eyes are just literally glued shut,
mm-hmm.
and they're not functioning very good for the first 20 minutes. Plus, this morning it was foggy out,
mm-hmm.
so I'm looking out the window going, is my eyes really bad right now, or is it really foggy outside? Somebody please wake up and tell me if it's foggy outside, because I can't tell. So, let's get to the contest winners. This was for the Spec Products, a see-through case for a MacBook or a MacBook Pro. We definitely want to thank them for supplying it. They will ship them out directly to the winners, and let's jump right into that, Chad.
We're going to try to call our first winner of the Spec Products contest. This is Eddie Broglin.
No, this is actually... Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah, this is Greg Ball.
Greg Ball.
Yep. He's in England. So we're going to try giving him a call. Greg.
Gosh,
pretty late there.
We'll be getting him out of bed, you know.
Hello?
Hi, is Greg there?
Yes, speaking.
Hi, Greg. This is Tim Robertson from the MyMac Podcast. How are you?
Hi. How are you?
Good. Did we wake you up?
No, I'm just up late, that's all.
Well, we wanted to call and congratulate you. You are one of our winners for the contest this week.
Oh, marvelous.
Great. I know on your entry you said, I hope I qualify. You were in the UK, and we said, absolutely, yeah. I don't have to pay the shipping. What do I care? But Chad was concerned that we would wake you up, and I said, it's okay. He entered the contest.
I realized after I entered how late it might be.
Yeah, there's definitely a time difference between here and the UK. So what kind of Mac are you using nowadays?
Well, I've got a MacBook at the moment and a Mac Mini as well.
So the contest was for the case.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you looked up there? Have you decided if you want any particular color or?
Well, I had a look on, and I think the green looks really cool, as in sort of an apple green.
Oh, that's cool. I do like that.
Yeah.
The see-throughs are really nice. Like mine got a lot of attention at the Macworld Expo,
mm-hmm.
and Chad and I went up to the Apple Store a couple months ago now, Chad.
Yep.
And did a contest up there in the store, a podcast, and I have the red one, and it just draws so much attention.
Mm-hmm.
You can really spot your own computer from quite a distance.
Uh-huh.
Not that I let my computer, you know, get too far away from me. So, do you work professionally with your Mac, or is it more that's just your home machine?
It's mainly my home machine, but although I do travel around for work purposes, and I take it with me, but I don't use it sort of like in the office too much. So it's mainly for home.
So primarily PC environment at work, just like me then, huh?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. Yeah, it's all PC stuff at work. But the Mac, I mean, we use a remote desktop, and we can use the Mac, so sort of can pretend to be Windows for half a day and then go and do proper Mac stuff afterwards.
Yeah, that's pretty much my life.
So what's your favorite application to use on the Mac nowadays?
What's the favorite application? Well, to be honest, I only really use things like iTunes and iPhoto. The way I've got it set up is my Mac Mini is a TV sort of recorder and multimedia center, and my MacBook is sort of my portable audio and video viewer, so I can wander around the house if the wife's watching the telly.
So what do you do? How do you connect the Mac Mini to the television?
It's just connected up via sort of like a composite video, and it's got a digital TV tuner plugged into the back of it, and it just records the telly off digital television terrestrial.
I know there's quite a few solutions to get HD content onto the Mac nowadays. Is that something that you're going to be looking at soon, or you're not quite going that route yet?
We haven't quite got there yet. The terrestrial, I don't think we can get HD over here just yet on terrestrial digital. I use it to watch my video podcasts and things like that on, and it's all hooked to the telly, and it just sits there.
Does the
telly.
Does the Apple TV hold any kind of, maybe I should go with that instead, or are you quite happy with the Mac Mini in that role?
Well, yeah, the Mac Mini's quite flexible. The Apple TV would be good if we had like the things like the film content, et cetera, which we have in the UK, which you have in the States.
Yeah.
But we don't have any film content or even TV shows or anything like that for iTunes, so...
I, 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 I kind of wish that Apple would come to some kind of agreement with Google and get YouTube content up on the Apple TV. I think that would make it much more worthwhile. I almost said worthless. Worthwhile. Although, looking at some of the videos up on YouTube, it probably would be worthless. Well, Greg, I will send you an email confirming everything. And so you have a MacBook, you said, not a MacBook Pro.
No, not a MacBook Pro. It's just a MacBook, yeah.
And that's what Chad has. I've got a MacBook Pro, and looking at his MacBook, for almost everything I do, his MacBook would be more than sufficient. But I do a little bit of graphic work, and I think that's probably a little bit better on a MacBook Pro.
Uh-huh.
But I will get your contact information that you sent to me off to Spec Products, and they will get it out to you ASAP.
Oh, thanks very much, guys.
Thanks for listening, Greg.
That's no problem. But, great show. I'll keep the good work up.
Thank you.
All right, Tim.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Hello?
Yeah, may I speak to Eddie Brocklin, please?
This is he.
Eddie, this is Chad Perry from the MyMac.com podcast. I'm here with Tim Robertson.
Hey, Eddie.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Hi there. How's it going?
Good.
How you doing?
He was like, damn, who do I owe money to? Who is... I don't know any.
That was my first thought. I was like, unavailable.
He's not here right
now.
Yeah, I know. It's because we're calling through Skype, so...
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So,
cool.
Yeah, we're calling you about the money that you owe Chad.
How much do I owe him?
Well, actually, now we owe you a case from Spec Products.
Yeah, we got to send the case
cool.
out to you now.
Excellent.
We were going to give three away, but you're the second person, and that's the only two we're giving away. You're the last person we're going to give one to, so congratulations.
Cool.
I know, it's hard to imagine that you won this great prize, isn't it? You probably thought, I'll send this in. I'm not going to win. What the heck? It's just an email, though.
It was like, might as well try.
Yeah, hey, you know.
Give it a shot, see
yeah.
what happens.
Dude, I love it when I get to give stuff away, especially if it's stuff that I don't own or paid for to give away.
Exactly.
That's the greatest.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. 100%. Oh, you bought this? Sure, we'll give it away.
Yeah.
No problem.
Bill Gates should hire me for the Gates Foundation. I can get rid of his money quicker than hell. It'd be gone, man. You're hungry? Here's money.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. What kind of disease you got? Okay, here.
There you go. So, what kind of MacBook do you got? Is it a MacBook or a MacBook Pro?
Actually, to be honest with you, I don't have one.
Well, now you're going to have to buy one.
Exactly. It's giving me more incentive to really kick in and get one as soon as possible. I do have a Mac Mini, though.
You're going to have to really warp this to get it around a Mac Mini, I think.
Once I get either a MacBook or the Pro, I will turn my Mac Mini into a home entertainment center.
Wow, that's really weird. The last person we talked to, our last winner, is exactly doing that.
Yeah.
That's weird that you would say that.
I'm actually picking up at one of those ITVs this afternoon for my Mac Mini.
Oh, sweet. Those were good. I used one myself. Not recently.
Oh, how is it?
I did the review of them. I was quite pleased with it. I mean, it's not HD quality, obviously, but...
Oh. I want to get it for the purpose of getting rid of my DVR because I have a DVR and I'm paying like $15 a month for it. Mm. I figured if I could get this ITV,
save
some money.
The ITV. I keep wanting to think ITV, the Apple TV.
Yeah.
Because Apple called the Apple TV the ITV, so I
right.
still get those. Yeah.
Right.
No, yeah, I liked the ITV a lot. I did a review up on it, maybe 6-8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh, wow. Cool.
It really works well. Like I said, the quality isn't the greatest, but it looks mm-hmm. better on a TV than it does on a video screen, surprisingly.
Wow.
I would think it would be just the opposite, but it looks better on a television than it does on my monitor, so... Well, if you do decide to get a MacBook, you definitely have something to put it in, the see-through case from Spec Products. You got to let me know if you want the MacBook or the MacBook Pro one, because there's two different ones, and you got to let me know what color.
There is.
Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because, one's a little bit bigger than the other. Mm-hmm. The 13-inch case probably wouldn't fit very well on the 15.
No.
I probably will be going with just the MacBook because the Pro is a little bit out of my price range right now.
They're expensive.
You'll be happy because I use a MacBook, and personally I don't see a need for a Pro for me. The MacBook does everything that I need it to do, and you'll be very happy with it, trust me. Especially the new ones.
I'm, Yeah, I'm most definitely happy with Mac. I'm going on close to 2 years being a switcher, and I don't even like to use the machines at work because we're on XP, and I hate them. I'm sitting there and.
Well, what made you switch? I mean, obviously, you were a PC user before. What made you think, you know what, this time I'm going to go with a Mac?
Well, I had actually, believe it or not, rented one of the all-in-ones, the first ones that come out that were clear and either blue.
Oh, sure.
Or orange. I rented one of those, and it had OS, I believe, 9 on it. Mm-hmm. And I had gotten a copy of OS 10, so I read the specs, and it would handle it, so I installed it, and I fell in love with it because the environment in OS 10 is just so much cleaner than Windows. And you don't have to click 10,000 times to get to the place where you need to go.
Yeah.
You click on the hard drive icon, and there everything is.
Have you
like one click away.
So Vista, it doesn't look like that's going to win you back at all for Microsoft? You've seen Vista?
Oh,
and
I wanted to get one of the Intel Macs because I kind of don't want to put Windows on it because to me it'd be like contaminating the Mac.
I hear you.
And I don't want to do that. Do you know if you could install Windows now? I can ask you, if you can install Windows on an external hard drive and boot it like through Parallels or Boot Camp.
You can do it with Parallels, I know, because you just point out where the virtual machine is. It doesn't care if it's on, but you won't be able to like install it on a FireWire hard drive and boot with Boot Camp on it. That doesn't work. It has to be the internal drive,
yeah.
But with Parallels, right. Yeah, you just make the disk image on whatever drive you want, as long as it's mounted, point at that, and it will fire it right up. That's what I did, and it worked quite well.
Yeah, because like I said, I don't want to contaminate my Mac. I actually, when I got my Mac, I had all my music burned onto the Windows. Instead of moving them over, I reburned them because I didn't want to contaminate my Mac with anything from Windows.
I hear you. Let me ask you, what are you looking forward to? What are you hoping that Leopard's going to bring to the table that we don't already have as Mac users? Is there like one thing that you're I can't wait?
Oh, Leopard, let's see. The Time Machine's cool, but from what I've heard from the different geek shows I listen to, one, you guys is definitely one of them. Everybody's not sure how it's actually going to work.
Yeah, well, the proof will be in the pudding, that's for sure.
Exactly. I'm actually kind of happy with Tiger right now, but Leopard definitely looks pretty cool. I do like the fact that you can have live widgets where you can take in a web page that you want to monitor daily. You can create a widget out of it.
Yep.
That is cool. I thought that was cool.
I downloaded the beta to that program and was using that a little bit. And I actually made the one for mymac.com and posted it. And they work great.
Mm-hmm.
They look good. It's almost too easy to do. It's simple. So, yeah, I agree with you. That's going to be cool.
But I really think that Microsoft should like really step back and look at Apple and what they've done and also their environment, because I just recently started putting my machine asleep when I went to work because I used to turn it off, and then I decided to put it to sleep. I get to the point now where I forget to restart it every once in a while. I can be sitting there, and it works so flawlessly. There's no problems, and I have to look in and fight. When was the last time I restarted this thing?
That happened to me today. I installed an update to my MacBook Pro, the battery, and it forced a restart, and it's been like 9 or 10 days since the last time I actually restarted it. And I thought, well, maybe it's kind of good that I am restarted. It's been that long. But mm-hmm. I was having no problems. It was running flawlessly.
Yeah.
I actually am trying to get my family to switch over to the Mac, too, because my mother especially, because she just has so much problems. She's always constantly calling me, telling me something's wrong with her Windows machine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the last time she called me, I was like, if this is a computer problem, my suggestion is buy a Mac.
You know, I had an aunt that I did the same thing with. Eventually, I said, if it's a PC, I'm not helping you. If you get a Mac, I'll come over as much as you need. I'll give you a hand. But if you're using a Windows PC, I'm not doing anything with those anymore. It's too much of a headache. I'm not dealing with them. And
a friend of mine has a Sony laptop, and the last time I tried to get rid of virus and also some spyware off his computer, I spent 8 hours getting rid of all that.
Oh, isn't it just a nightmare?
I, and I keep telling them, like, dude, I switched to a Mac, you won't have to worry about that.
They don't listen, do they? They never listen.
I know. And I even told them, I said, you also, with the new Intel Macs, I said, since you're a gamer, you can have both.
Yeah, exactly.
You can have your Apple, and then when games that you want to play that are Windows-specific, boot into Windows. There you go.
Well, we want to congratulate you and thank you for listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
I was glad that you were there and answered the phone. We definitely wanted to give another one away, and
I definitely love you guys. So
I will send you an email confirming everything, and congratulations.
We'll just need to know what kind you want and what color.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Eddie.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Hello, my name is David Cohen and I'm the London Bureau Chief for MyMac.com. Welcome to Fenestration, my guide to using a Mac in a Windows world. Welcome to Fenestration number 30. Today's session I'm going to talk through a networking issue I encountered this week. This issue can affect any user of a computer, whether they be Windows or Mac. What was interesting about it was I'd specifically chosen Apple equipment to use on my Mac network in the hope that it would make my configuration easier. As Mac users, we know that Apple values the usability of their products above most other things, and goes to extra special effort to ensure that the way their products are engineered and that the way the software works with them makes them very easy to configure. Despite this, and also despite the fact I wasn't using nasty old Windows equipment, I still encountered a problem that took a fair amount of head-scratching to solve. My situation is this. In my home network, I have a single wireless router, and that's connected in my living room to the cable modem that's hanging out the back of my television. Now, that router gives me coverage over most of the house, but it doesn't give me great coverage in my office, which is actually in a conservatory, but almost like an outbuilding that's outside the main walls of the house. Now, in the past, when I had a Linksys router connected to the cable modem, I dealt with this by having an Airport Express put in my office, and I used the wireless distribution system that's built into Wi-Fi to actually extend my network out to my office in the conservatory. And this meant that I had good wireless coverage in the conservatory for my laptop and for my desktop G5. Now, when Apple launched its new Extreme N routers recently, I decided that I would purchase one as soon as I got an opportunity. Not only does it offer better coverage than the existing G-Linksys router that I had, it also allows faster throughput on the network, even if you're not using Wi-Fi N cards. Anyway, I finally got a chance to get hold of one, and when it arrived, I disconnected my Linksys router, connected the new Apple router, and within about 10 minutes I had the network up and running, and that was absolutely great. I did indeed find the coverage was better, and that I now had perfectly good wireless coverage in my office just from the single router. However, after some consideration, I decided to re-enable my Airport Express and get it participating in the network using wireless distribution system in the way that I had before, principally because I have a printer in my office, and it's much more convenient for me to have it plugged into the Airport Express on the other side of the room than it is to move the printer and get it next to my computer and plug it into the USB port of the computer itself. The issue I rapidly encountered was the fact that I could not get the Airport Express to join the network, either in WDS mode or even just as a network client. As a network client, I mean configuring the Airport Express just to pretend that it's a standard airport card in a computer. Nothing I could think of could make this work. Whatever I tried, it just sat there blinking an orange light at me. Now, at first I thought, well, maybe I need to update the firmware. So I updated the firmware both on the Airport Express and on the new Extreme router, which I found that there had been some firmware updates for it. Then I thought maybe it was a configuration problem. The new Airport Extreme router comes with a new piece of software for configuration called the Airport Utility, and this is designed to be a one-stop shop for configuring all airport devices on your network. It looks very clean, but the problem is it hides quite a lot of its functionality away from the user, and it's not really got a very good help file. The help file is very generic. It talks about the nuts and bolts of setting networks up, but it doesn't specifically say how to do it using this particular piece of software. I had to do a bit of trawling around the net to find out how to make the best use of this configuration utility. I found, for instance, that when it scans the network and puts pictures of the routers on your network up in the utility, By double-clicking on them, that's how you get into the advanced mode and actually get all the detailed configuration changes. But even using that, I couldn't get this Airports Express to see the Airports Extreme. And it was really confusing, because I'd read online that it was supposed to be able to see it automatically, and would also magically configure a WDS connection, rather than doing it manually. Yet whatever I tried, it just didn't work. Eventually I gave up and decided that I would do without it for the time being, but I did come back to it again this week. I started thinking that perhaps there was local interference. Maybe another network was in the area, or maybe somebody had a leaky microwave oven. Microwave ovens operate on the same frequency as Wi-Fi networks, and if they're not sealed properly, they can actually disrupt a network. I got hold of a copy of Mac Stumbler and started looking at what was available, and sure enough I did find there was another network in my area, and this was when the plot really started to thicken. The new network in my area is obviously one of the houses around me. Somebody else has got around to installing wireless, and I noticed using Mac Stumbler that they were operating on channel 11. Now, there are various different channels that are available on a Wi-Fi network, and what these channels represent are subdivisions of the 2.4 GHz frequency that Wi-Fi operates on. Now, I know that you can have two networks running on the same channel. The problem is, there's only so much bandwidth available if you do that, and each of the two networks operates at a slower speed than it would necessarily operate if it was on a different channel. So I thought to myself, well, maybe running on channel 11, maybe my network's running on channel 11, maybe that's the problem. So I started looking into the channel configuration settings for the routers I was using. What was interesting is they were both set to automatic. And in that mode, they should basically identify what channel each of the other is using and match themselves. What I noticed was my Airports Extreme, which I bought here in the UK, had a channel list of 1 to 13, and it was set on automatic mode and it was selecting channel 13 as its default channel. Great, I thought, that's a different channel from channel 11, which this other network is using, I should be fine. However, when I looked at my Airports Express, it only had channels 1 to 11 in the configuration utility. I rapidly realised the reason for this is that particular Airport Express was purchased for me by my brother in the United States. And in the US, the FCC has only licensed channels 1 to 11 to be used, whereas here in Europe we can use channels 1 to 13. What was happening is my Airports Extreme was defaulting to channel 13, and my Airports Express wasn't able to match it because it's not allowed to switch to channel 13, because channel 13 has been blocked out from it by the firmware that's in the Airports Express. The realities of Wi-Fi channels are that you have to be at least 4 channels away from a network on a different channel in order to avoid cross-interference. So what I did is I reset my Airports Extreme to use channel 1. Sure enough, immediately my Airports Express, when I rebooted it, was able to see the network and join straight away, and I was then able to use the new airport utility to create an automatic WDS network between the Airports Extreme and the Airports Express. I could print to my printer, and I now had extremely good coverage right throughout my house. I've recounted this tale here with Infenestration for 2 reasons. Firstly, as I said before, we tend to make the assumption as Mac users that if we have all Apple equipment, everything will automatically configure and we won't have any problems. And 90% of the time that will be the case. But as my story demonstrates, this doesn't always happen depending on exactly what you have in your network. So it's just something that's worth bearing in mind. The second point to illustrate is that I've received communication from listeners in the past who are having problems on their network and feel that it may be a problem by running Windows equipment and Apple equipment together. What I hope this story demonstrates is that it's probably not anything to do with the fact of the manufacturer of the equipment, but it is likely to be a configuration problem or an interference problem or something of that nature. And it's always worth persevering to try to get to the end of it and figure out what's going on. That's going to do it for this session. As always, questions or comments to davidcohen@mymac.com. Until the next time.
How many of you are using Aperture? What is Aperture? Is it just a fancy version of iPhoto? We have author Ben Long with us today at BookBytes Live here on the MyMac.com podcast, and we are discussing a book called Aperture 1.5, Professionally Manage Digital Photographs by Ben Long and Orlando Luna. It's part of the Apple Pro Training Series. Comes with a DVD-ROM, including lessons and media files. The cost in the United States is $50. It's $62 in Canada and £36 in the United Kingdom. Welcome, Ben Long, to the MyMac.com podcast.
Thank you very much, John.
Which application should Macintosh owners be using? Should we be using Aperture from Apple or Lightroom from Adobe Systems?
Boy, that's a really big question. I think one of the things we're going to see with Aperture and Lightroom is kind of like the Quark versus InDesign decision, the old Illustrator versus Freehand decision. The
right.
applications, each application is just gonna strike a chord with some users, and you really kind of just got to get your hands on both to make a decision. The great thing is there are demo versions of both of them, 30-day free trial versions that you can download from Apple and Adobe. So it is possible to get your hands on them. I have my opinion. I think that both are excellent applications, and we should be really glad to have both of these out there because Apple and Adobe, you know, the old saw about competition fostering, you know, development and ingenuity is definitely true in this case. Aperture hit this market first and kind of defined the market. They recognized that it's not just about image editing. It's about your whole workflow. How do you manage your images? How do you organize them? How do you find the images that you want? How do you make the selects out of a huge chute full of images? How do you keep them backed up? And Aperture does all those things. Adobe answered with Lightroom. And I think if you want to find a simple way of dividing the two applications, you could say that Aperture is much, much stronger at project management, which makes sense that since it's coming from a company that has developed an entire operating system. Lightroom has a lot of strengths in terms of image editing, which makes a lot of sense since it's coming from Adobe, which pretty much invented modern image editing. So one way to break it down right off the bat is to say, if you're really about lots of maniacal editing, you might find you like Lightroom a little more. If you prefer to get it right in camera and what your workflow is really about is trying to manage all your images, you might like Aperture a little more. That said, Aperture has excellent image editing tools. Lightroom has very good project management tools. So it's really worth trying to get your hands on both.
Well, how long does it take for somebody to become comfortable with Aperture when they're starting from scratch and they're only familiar with, say, Adobe Photoshop Elements or iPhoto?
It's going to be a little bit easier. If they're coming from iPhoto, a lot of it's going to seem very similar because iPhoto already has a managed library system. It's not a document-centered application the way that Photoshop or Elements, the way those programs are. So if you're coming from iPhoto, it's going to be a pretty intuitive leap. If you're coming from a more document-centered application, it's going to take a little while to get used to the idea that, in a way, what Aperture and Lightroom is, but what Aperture is kind of a Finder replacement. I think where the biggest stumbling block for people getting comfortable with Aperture is they want to drop it into their workflow as a replacement for Photoshop. Most people start their workflow in the Finder. They manage their images by grouping them into folders, and then when they decide they want to edit one, they go to that folder, get that image, open it up in their image editor. So people think, well, I'll just replace my image editor with Aperture. And that doesn't work. What you're actually doing is you're replacing the Finder. You're replacing your entire workflow with Aperture. Hmm. Once you get used to that idea, you can become comfortable with it very quickly. The interface is excellent. It's a really fun program to use, but you can't think of it like a document-centered application the way you do a normal image editor.
Thank you. Going back to your book, Aperture 1.5, Professionally Manage Digital Photographs, and the publisher is Peach Pit Press. We forgot to mention that. Tell us about the DVD lessons and the media files and the itemized lists that begin each chapter. What do we get for $50?
Well, the Pro Training Series books are, and this is, you know, the entire series of Pro Training books. There's a Pro Training book for all of the Pro applications that Apple makes, Final Cut Pro, Compressor, DVD Studio, all of those things. There's also books on color management. So the way these work are they are a series of lessons that you follow along with in the book. This book is also the textbook for the Apple Certified Pro Training class that you can take to be a certified Aperture user or trainer. And so when you go to any chapter in the book basically the book works you through learning everything about Aperture through a series of lessons. So for example, we got here chapter 3, navigating the browser or organizing and rating images. That's going to walk you through the whole process of once you've imported images, which you did earlier in the book, getting them organized, getting them rated. And so there's a DVD that has a whole bunch of media on it and a whole bunch of Aperture projects that are pre-built that are designed to work with the step-by-step lessons in this book. So when you're buying this book, what you're getting is a class, and you'll want to expect that you're not going to lay in bed and read this book at night before you go to sleep to learn Aperture. You're going to be sitting at your computer working along with it in a step-by-step manner.
And the image files on the pages are the same ones that are included in the DVD that's in the back of the book.
Exactly.
And the production values in this book are exceptional. I want to compliment you and everybody who's involved. The images are gorgeous. The text is well spaced out. And just everything is beautifully laid out for a textbook that is a very class act. Speaking of the word class, how did you and your colleague Orlando Luna develop your detailed tutorials, and how did you create all these gorgeous screenshots that are on every single page?
Well, the idea was, since Aperture is a workflow-based program, we really wanted to try and set up some real-world workflow situations. We basically divided the book almost in half. Orlando took the first 7 chapters, I think, and I took the remaining chapters. And we had spec'd out different types of shoots. He was doing a model shoot and a couple of other types of shoots. I was doing some event shooting. I shot some circus rehearsals and some band performances and things like that.
Yes.
And with those real-world projects in mind, we basically took apart the process that an actual professional photographer goes through on these different types of jobs and decided that we would build each step of that process into an Aperture lesson, because that's the way that Aperture is structured. So these images were actually coming from actual jobs. As far as the production of the book goes, PeachPit works very closely with Apple. Apple's involved in the editing and all the quality control and making sure that the book fits in well with the classes and that all the materials work together. And PeachPit's just, I agree with you, they've done a great job on figuring out all the production values. They have very particular ways that they want their screenshots converted to CMYK and all of that kind of stuff.
And you can take this class as a self-directed tutorial. You don't need to fly to Kuala Lumpur or someplace to take an Apple certified training class. You can do this right at home and get the exact same lessons that all the pros are getting. Isn't that correct?
That's exactly right, yes.
Why is it important to have a neutral work environment in your physical room and also on your computer display, author Ben Long?
Well, that depends on how color picky you're going to be, and how color picky you're going to be depends on how you're going to output your images. So the idea of a neutral environment is that if there are other bright colors or things in your field of view, that will actually skew your perception of color. Your eyes do an amazing job of constantly correcting the color that you see in real time. So this is something that no camera or film technology or digital camera that we've ever developed can do. If I hold a white piece of paper in front of you inside, you see it and it looks white. If I take it outside in direct sunlight, it still looks white. If we go into shade, it still looks white. Your eye is correcting those tones on the fly all the time. And again, that's something we don't have. We can't create a technology that does that. So when you're looking at your monitor and you're trying to judge accurate color, and there are a bunch of other colors or tones in your field of view, your eye, its automatic correction might get screwed up, and then the colors that you see on your screen may not be quite accurate. So you want a neutral gray desktop or background pattern on your computer. If you're really a color maniac, then, you know, you paint your walls gray, you don't wear bright clothing, you really put yourself in the most boring environment you possibly can. Now, if you're just going to output your images for the web or to email to somebody else, you don't need to be this picky, because you have no idea what it's going to look like on their monitor anyway, since there's really no way of calibrating for display on other monitors. We're talking about a circumstance where you're going to do a very controlled, color-managed printing situation that you really need to be careful about your background.
So we're talking about a professional environment. And when we talk about professionals these days, we talk about image files that are called RAW. Now, does Aperture require RAW files, or can it work with JPEGs, PSDs, which are Photoshop documents, or TIFF files?
Yes, Aperture will work with all of the standard formats that are supported by the Mac OS. So any file you can open in Preview or iPhoto or just in the Finder, you're going to be able to open in Aperture. So you hit them, you hit all the biggies. It'll open Photoshop documents, TIFFs, JPEGs, PNGs, I think GIF files, and it will work with RAW files. Now, the thing about RAW files is there's no standard format for RAW. And this is not just true with Aperture. This is true for anybody who's making software to read RAW files. There's no standard format. Every camera vendor defines their own type of RAW file. So your RAW converter application, be it Aperture, Lightroom, Photoshop, iPhoto, it has to have special profiles inside it that allow it to read specific RAW formats. On the Macintosh, Apple has built a RAW conversion engine at the OS level. So if Aperture can read a RAW file, a particular type of RAW file, so can iPhoto, so can Preview, so can Image Capture. And right now, Apple is, they don't support as many RAW files as Adobe does because Adobe's been at this for a long time, but they've got all the major cameras out there. If you have an older camera, you may have trouble with your RAW files in Aperture, but you can do your RAW conversion somewhere else and save it as a TIFF file or PSD and then bring those into Aperture. But yes, one of the great things about Aperture is it, you don't have a separate RAW conversion step the way you do in Photoshop. It's, you can work with RAW files just like you work with JPEGs, just like you work with TIFFs. It's just when you're working with RAW, you have some extra editing latitude.
We have a lot of beginners and intermediates here listening to the Book Bites live segment of our MyMac.com podcast, and they don't give two hoots about Aperture. Who really needs Aperture, and who is just fine staying with iPhoto if they're already perfectly happy with it? And a short answer is okay, author Ben Long.
Okay. That's a good question. If you are happy with iPhoto, there's no need to upgrade. Why might you want to upgrade? If you're wanting if you're wanting more powerful editing controls, if you want more powerful organization, if you've got just tons of images that you're trying to manage and you're having difficulty keeping them organized in the way that you want in iPhoto, you're going to want to move to Aperture. If you're a heavy RAW shooter and you really want good RAW controls and powerful editing tools, you're going to want to move to Aperture. iPhoto is a great program, though.
Speaking of editing, your 55-page Chapter 9 is called Advanced Editing. Why do you call it advanced editing and not basic editing? Because it covers things that I consider to be fairly basic, like color, temperature, exposure, black and white conversion, and sharpening.
That's a good question, and it points to the fact that Aperture is a 1.0 product. This is a first release from Apple, and so obviously the editing features are not nearly as deep as what you're going to find in a program like Photoshop that's been around for 17 years. There's a little bit of image editing earlier in the book, just some basic things. So we were just trying to separate. Earlier in the book, you get a hit of, look, here's how you do some real quickie tonal corrections. Now we're going to go a little more advanced. We're going to talk about the difference of using the white balance adjustment on a RAW file versus a non-RAW file, some things like that. So, yes, you're right. Compared to Photoshop, these are basic tools. But we're waiting for Aperture's tool set to be expanded. It does 80 to 90% of what you're going to want to do on any image that you're working with.
Okay.
For the most part, Aperture's editing tools are all that most users need.
Good. Three quick questions. And may I correct you? You said it's a version 1.0 product. Are we correct that Aperture now is at version 1.5?
Good point. Yes, thank you. 1.5 was a free upgrade to 1.0. It added two new editing tools. We're at 1.5 now.
So it's Aperture 1.5, Professionally Managed Digital Photographs by Orlando Luna and Ben Long. That's the book we're discussing today from Peach Pit Press on the MyMac.com Book Bites Live podcast. Three real quick questions. How important are Aperture's keyboard shortcuts and using them for your lessons, like you list at the back of each chapter, as opposed to just figuring it out with the mouse and the menus?
Everything in Aperture has a keyboard shortcut, which means if you're really used to the program, you can just fly through almost everything by driving it from the keyboard rather than having to click with the mouse. You can really choose. You can mix and match. You can do stuff with the mouse. You can do stuff with the keyboard. I personally much prefer using the keyboard. I think it's faster. Also, I've got repetitive stress injury, things like that. So Getting away from the mouse is good for me.
Now here's a question, a trick question to make sure you really wrote the book. What is a stack and why is it important within Aperture?
A stack is a way of grouping images within Aperture. So let's say I go out and I shoot a scene and I've bracketed it four different ways. I'm only going to ultimately want one of those images. In Aperture, I can group those images into a stack, which is simply a logical grouping. What I see in Aperture is just one image. I see the pick image that I've made. But if I want, I can open that stack up, and then I see all of my alternate images. What's great about this, and this is what I mean about Aperture being a Finder replacement, I can keep related images grouped together in a stack. I can throw that stack into, say, a web page and show it to a client, and they might look through images. As far as they're concerned, they're just looking at individual images. But if they get to one and they say, you know, actually, I'm not crazy about this image. Do you have an alternate? I don't have to go digging through the Finder, worrying about file names, trying to remember where I put things. I just open up the stack and go, yeah, here's an alternate right here. Make that the pick, and then that's what they see.
Good.
It's a really great organizational tool.
Oh, excuse me. Excuse me for interrupting. For our last question, we're interviewing Ben Long, and we want to know, do you have a personal website and other work projects in addition to your books and articles?
Yes, you can check out www.completedigitalphotography.com.
Completedigitalphotography.com.
Exactly. You'll find links to lots of other books, lots of articles, even a bunch of free software, all sorts of stuff.
Very good. We'd like to thank author Ben Long for joining us today on the Book Bites Live segment of the MyMac.com podcast. He is the author, along with Orlando Luna, of Aperture 1.5, a DVD-ROM Lessons, Media Files, and the Apple Pro Training Series from Peach Pit Press. Thank you for joining us, Ben.
Thank you very much, John.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.